Well, we go to the Revel Wireless Hotline right now, and we are pleased to be joined by Kerry Byrne. He is the publisher of coldhardfootballfacts.com, a great site to get into the nitty-gritty numbers of this game. You also can check him out at footballnation.com. Kerry, welcome to the show.
Vic, always a pleasure. Excited for a new season, not too far away now.
Absolutely. You are a man of numbers, and the stats can tell all kinds of stories. So we're excited to have you in that regard, and then obviously we want to focus on the Browns and get your thoughts on what the numbers tell you. And I know this is the time of year when you're looking back to last season, you're looking at trends maybe over multiple seasons, Kerry, and what and how they may translate into 2013. What are these numbers telling you about this Browns team as we head into the 2013 season?
Well, you know, the one eternal truth of football, you know, football is a very complex game, right? A lot of moving parts, a lot of coaches, a lot of players, a lot of different units. Statistically speaking, Vic, it's a very simple game. You win when you dominate the battle of passing efficiency. If your quarterback consistently outplays the other quarterback, you win games. And that's we know the passing game is important now, but it's always been important. The NFL has always been that way. Even in the 1940s with the Chicago Bears, the 1950s with the Glory Day Browns teams, they were the most dominant teams in terms of passing efficiency, both offensively and playing great pass defense defensively. And, you know, reality in recent years, you know, kind of the new Browns since 1999, their problem, as we all know, is finding a quarterback, finding a guy who can carry the mantle. And that's been, obviously, the great struggle. And one thing I think that really highlights that, Vic, one number, okay? I looked at the Browns' passer rating since 1999, okay? And passing efficiency is really important. People like to make fun of passer rating, but it's actually quite an enlightening number. The Cleveland Browns have a 71.4 average passer rating per season since 1999, Vic, in a league where average is about 80 to 82. Okay. Their passer rating in the 15 years from 1950, their first championship, to 1964, their last, was almost 80, 79.9. The Browns pass the ball better in the 50s and 60s than they have in the 21st century, which is almost impossible. But it really, considering how much easier it is to pass the football in this day and age, considering that the average passer rating is 20 points higher today than it was in the 50s, the Browns just have not found that quarterback, as we all know. And, you know, if things are going to change, it's not going to change until they find that key player. And you hope, you know, I kind of like how Brandon Weeden played after that. You know, he kind of had a very tough debut game against the Eagles. I think he threw four interceptions that day. Kind of settled in, was not lights out. But for a rookie quarterback, I think he did show some promise. I think, you know, the jury's still out. He didn't prove himself, say, like an RG3 or to me a Russell Wilson did. But if he can become that anchor, that changes everything. It really, the NFL is that simple at the end of the day. You win when you pass the ball effectively.
And I think another part of that equation is the influence of North Turner and Rob Chudzinski as well as head coach. But Turner, quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator, he's going to be the guy who people will look to say, okay, can he work some kind of magic with Weeden? Can his influence make the difference? And I think there's reason to think that will happen. And the numbers are going to, as usual, tell that story as well. But I wondered how you'd connect the dots statistically between North Turner and Weeden, or North Turner and the Browns' ailing passing game, given North's history with success throwing the ball elsewhere.
Well, you know, listen, Turner's always been a great – the line on him, he's been a better coordinator than a head coach, right? And I think there's a general belief, and I think he's always had it seems like he's always had good offensive teams under him, largely has, when he's been a coordinator. You know, in the years in San Diego, Phillip Rivers put up great numbers. The San Diego Chargers, year after year, but for about a 3 or 4 year period there under North Turner, had the highest average per pass attempt year after year. That's a key figure. You have a higher — we talked about the importance of passer rating. If you pass more efficiently, you tend to win games. If you have a higher average per pass attempt, Vic, you win about 75% of all NFL games. Just look at that one number and nothing else, and you could pick the winner in three of every four NFL games. And the fact that Rivers was, you know, over 8 yards per attempt most of those years with North Turner, I think speaks to his effectiveness, that he can get a quarterback to pass the ball down the field effectively. In the case of Chudzinski, obviously his stock rose with Cam Newton. You know, the two came in together into Carolina, taking over what was a very bad offensive team in 2010. I don't think they scored 200 points in 2010. But I do wonder how much of that is Chudzinski's influence and how much of that was the fact that Cam Newton is just a lights-out talent. So the influence, I think, of Turner, obviously a much more accomplished coach at this point in his career. Chudzinski's still a very young coach. That I think that, to me, is the more positive sign of the two. Not anything about Chudzinski negatively. Just saying, I don't know. To me, the jury is still out because I don't know whether to credit Newton or his influence in Carolina. Mm-hmm. But whereas Turner's influence is pretty rock solid, and I think that's something to hang your hat on. I think you look at how Whedon evolved over the, you know, like I said, largely only that really bad meltdown game in his first NFL start, and there's a long list of great quarterbacks who played poorly in their first NFL game. So. I think there are reasons to be optimistic that things could change and change for the better in Cleveland.
And as we talk about the passing game, Kerry, I know the focus is going to be on quarterbacking numbers because he's the guy with the ball in his hand, but receivers influence this quite a bit too. And the fact was, a year ago, he didn't have a consistent group. He had a young and developing Josh Gordon. He had a Greg Little that was still struggling with concentration. Travis Benjamin was still feeling his way in a big way, and there really wasn't anyone else to hang your hat on. When you look at this receiving group, obviously Gordon's got more time under his belt. It looked like he was making a lot of progress in the offseason. Yes, he's going to miss those first two games with the suspension.
Yep.
But you think of Little also looking pretty good in the offseason. And then I think the real big story at the receiving position, Devon Bess being acquired, a sure-handed slot guy. How much can you see that impacting the numbers?
Well, you want better talent at every position, right? I mean, that goes without saying. But really, to me, at the end of the day, it is all about the quarterback. I mean, we've seen time and time again that great receivers go to teams with bad quarterbacks and become bad receivers. And great quarterbacks can have, you know, bad receivers around them and make them better. I think the great example last year is Larry Fitzgerald in Arizona. I mean, here's a great wide receiver, a guy who's had an incredible career. And the Cardinals last year were the worst passing team in football because they didn't have a quarterback. That's really it. And you know, they drafted Michael Floyd very high in the draft. This was a team that had one a great veteran in Fitzgerald and a great young receiver in Michael Floyd, but still a terrible passing team because they didn't have a quarterback. So to me, you want more talent at that position. But if you don't have the quarterback to get them the ball, it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. What I prefer to look at, generally speaking, is how's your pass defense. How do you play pass defense as a team? And in that respect, Cleveland was average. They were middle of the road. They were, you know, 16th in defensive pass rating, one of the stats I like to look at. 17th in defensive quarterback rating, another stat we like to look at. 17th in average per pass attempt against them. So it was not a bad pass defense. That defense has some promise. That's a defense that you might be able to improve and instantly make your team better just on that side of the ball, which makes your offense look better, obviously. So to me, it's really not so much about the receivers. I do like the best acquisition, but it's to me it's more about developing that quarterback, and obviously you do want to make life as easy on him as possible. But I look to see, no matter who you put around Whedon, he needs to improve, he needs to get more accurate, and I think, you know, the foundation is there for him to do it.
Kerry Byrne joins us. He is the publisher of ColdHeartFootballFacts.com. Great website for inside the number stats on the National Football League. You also check out his great work on Football Nation. Joining us on the Revel Wireless Hotline, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. So, Kerry, you brought up the defense, and that's where I wanted to go next. Ray Horton is the new defensive coordinator for the Browns. You're quite familiar with the work he did as a coordinator with the Arizona Cardinals, and what the Browns hope they bought in bringing him in here is that same aggressive mentality and the guy who will push the right buttons for Paul Kruger, for Desmond Bryant, for Quentin Groves, the newcomers to this group. And then, of course, people like Jabal Sheard, who've already been here, and Phil Taylor and others within this front seven to be attacking, to force the action. Do you see, given what you know about Horton and his statistical history as a coordinator, that influence coming into play for the Browns defense, particularly that front seven? But as you also point out, it's about your pass defense overall, your secondary.
Well, let me tell you the exciting thing about Horton. If I'm a Browns fan, if I'm looking at numbers that excite me as a football fan, one of the foundation numbers we look at, we call them quality stats at coldheartfootballfacts.com. These are stats that have a direct correlation to winning football games. We look at stats that move in lockstep with wins and losses. And no defensive stat is more important than defensive passer rating. Year after year, teams that we take the formula for quarterback and we apply it to pass defense. Year after year, the teams that dominate this indicator dominate on the field. One exception was the Arizona Cardinals last year. They were number one in defensive pass rating. They were the best pass defense in football. But their problem, why they suffered, is that they were the worst passing team in football. No matter how you measure them, yards per attempt, real quarterback rating, one of our stats, offensive pass rating, any measure of efficiency, the Arizona Cardinals were the worst passing team in football. Despite that, they had the best pass defense in football. So right there, I mean, and not only that, in all his years when he was a secondary coach in Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh year after year was one of the leaders in the NFL in average per pass attempt against them and in defensive pass rating, including the 2 years they won the Super Bowl. I believe he was the secondary coach on both those teams in 2005 and 2008. They were very, very good at making life miserable on opposing quarterbacks. So he has a very great track record of putting together great pass defenses. Now, if you can take what's already, like I said, a decent pass defense, if he can put his influence on that and really get that into a top five, top six pass defense, all of a sudden the Browns are going to be a scary team because it's hard to win NFL games if you can't pass the football against an opponent. And, you know, that could be the case this year. The Cleveland opponents could find it very, very difficult to pass the football.
Well, that's encouraging stuff, and it's good to hear that, absolutely.
I mean, it's not just a year or two. We're looking at, you know, a decade of a pretty strong track record for Ray Horton, where consistently some of the best pass defenses in football. And it's really about pass defense, Vic, and kind of one of our mantras is, you know, analysts like to talk about running the football and stopping the run and establishing the run, but reality is year after year we have plenty of great running teams that are bad teams and plenty of bad pass run defenses that are great defenses. It's all about how well you pass the football and how well you stop the football. The running game, I don't want to call it irrelevant. It's not. You still need to try to run the football, but the games are won and lost by how well you pass the football and stop the pass. And in that respect, Ray Horton's track record is largely without peer over the past decade.
So let's talk about the rest of the AFC North, Kerry, and focus on the fact that obviously the defending Super Bowl champion comes out of this division, and it's a team that's undergone a lot of changes, the Baltimore Ravens, a lot of players out the door, including the iconic Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, Paul Kruger, their big sack kingpin from 2000, one of them from 2012, is now a Cleveland Brown.
Yeah, another reason to be encouraged, you know, if they have any offseason pickup.
So as you assess the rest of this division, and I want to start with the Ravens, but how do you see this playing out in terms of the numbers that you now maybe reconfigure given all the changes in Baltimore?
Well, listen, let's start at the top. Let's start with Baltimore, okay? They were a good team last year, but they were not a great team. They did not have the statistical signature profile you usually see out of NFL champions. What happened is Joe Flacco got hot in the playoffs. I mean, he was the highest-rated passer in the postseason, I think like 115, something like that, you know, passer rating through the four playoff games. He put up great, great numbers. The Baltimore Ravens won because he had four straight games. He was the best quarterback on the field. With that said, he doesn't have the proven track record that, you know, he hasn't done it week in and week out like a Tom Brady has, like a Peyton Manning has. I still don't know if Joe Flacco is that quarterback we saw all, you know, in the previous several years of his career where he was largely an average quarterback, or is he now the guy we saw in the four playoff games? I don't want to say the jury's still out on him because now he's a Super Bowl champion. He's a Super Bowl MVP. But he's got a lot of money, but he doesn't have that, which is really what you want at the end of the day, right? Who cares about your real quarterback rating? So, but with that said, you know, I don't know yet if he's that incredible quarterback we saw in those four games. I don't know yet. So, you know, that leaves Baltimore, I think, a little, there's still some question marks there. On top of all the attrition, specifically defensively, they've suffered. I don't see them as an instant playoff contender, even though they just won the Super Bowl. And how many times in recent, you know, decades have we seen a Super Bowl champ regress afterward? You know, it happens quite a bit. So I do think the division's a little wide open because of that. To me, Pittsburgh's always kind of your favorite. I mean, I know they have some years where they regress back to 8-8, but those periods where they struggle are few and far between. Ben Roethlisberger is a very good quarterback. We've seen him do it over the long haul. He has an unorthodox style, we all know that, but he gets the ball downfield as well as any quarterback in the history of football. He averages over 8 yards per attempt, one of the highest averages in the history of the game. He's in the top five, believe it or not. And last year, you know, he had a really good season last year. I mean, he threw, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. If they can shore up some of those problems, which on defense, on defensively, the defensive line wasn't as good last year as we used to see. I do, to me, Pittsburgh, I see, is kind of the favorite to recapture the division. Cincinnati is obviously a team on the rise, two straight playoff appearances, but they don't scare anybody. They don't scare me. They don't have any one thing that they're really great at that you say, oh, no, we have to watch out for the Cleveland, for the Cincinnati Bengals. So, you know, that leaves Cleveland. I think Cleveland can, if their defense improves, if Horton brings those changes we expect to see on defense, those improvements we expect to see on defense, if some of their draft picks like Mingo pay off, you know, the Browns devoted a lot of resources in the draft to defensive players, if those guys pay off, you know, we could see a very improved defense. And if Whedon improves, as most second-year quarterbacks do, I do like their chances to compete, maybe compete for a wild card spot. I don't think that's out of the question by any stretch of the imagination.
And I'm hearing that you don't necessarily buy in as much as I'm hearing some other analysts that, you know, look out for the Bengals and look out for what they may do, that they drafted well, that they did a decent job of retaining. They mostly focused on retaining the players they have because they think they've got a pretty good team together. But you don't seem to be in that camp.
I mean, they you know, we've seen the same team 2 years in a row now. I don't think they really improved over the last 2 years. I think they improved, you know, from 2010, but the 2011 and 2012 teams were largely the same. This is an organization that doesn't have a great track record, you know, putting together winning teams year after year. And to me, institutional history matters in football. It really does. You see the same teams that are good at the same things, good year after year after year, decade after decade. One reason why I'm generally, you know, bullish on the Steelers. There's no, you should be, given their history. You know, the Bengals, I just don't have that confidence. I don't know, you know, Andy Dalton's a nice young quarterback. I like him. I like how he plays. But they were an average offense last year. He was an above average, slightly above average quarterback, if not, you know, average quarterback, playing with a slightly above average defense. I don't see any reason for them to explode this year. I see them, you know, as certainly a wild card contender, but I don't see them as anything close to a contender for the conference crown. So
all right.
I'm just not, you know, I don't see what they're so good at in the numbers I look at. Again, the numbers that win and lose football games, these certain efficiency numbers that we identify, that if you're good in this number, you know, for example, Vic, if you're better at what we call real quarterback rating, it's our measure of all aspects of quarterback play. If you're better in that indicator, you win 85% of all NFL games.
Right.
So that's an indicator I put a lot of stock in. The Bengals were 15th last year. They're an average team in a lot of important indicators.
Kerry, wonderful breakdown of everything. It's fascinating, and we'll have you back on, of course, for sure. And thank you so much for taking the time with us.
All right, Vic, always a pleasure. I appreciate the time.
He is Kerry Byrne. He's the publisher of ColdHardFootballFacts.com. Also check him out on FootballNation.com. He's joining us on the Revel Wireless Hotline right here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. So much more ahead on ESPN 850 WKNR.